All right, welcome back. Hour number three. Now, Mitchell Henderson is without question one of the best geopolitical military analysts and observers out there. I would place at the top of the heap of regularly dispersed information, without question, Colonel Douglas MacGregor. That man is not only a wizard when it comes to baseline military brilliance, but he understands that this country is being taken down. He knows what's going on. And I invited him on the program, and as I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, his screener, I don't know who it is, decided that some of the filth about me on the Internet was enough to keep him off the program. So at any rate, we'll continue to bring him to you on the website via his videos. They're very heartening to see someone that articulate and that intelligent about the big picture. And I had no idea. He was kind of holding that back, I think, during the early part of his tenure as a military analyst. It was interesting. But Mitch is right there. Mitch has sources in Ukraine. He's got sources in Russia. And he is right now sitting in the middle of the great state, the great communist Bolshevik state of New Mexico. And boy, do we have a story there. The governor, I guess they're talking about recall now. That would be a polite way to end that nightmare. Hello, Mitch. Welcome back.
Hello. Good to be here.
Yeah.
I want to start off tonight by just bringing up some developments in the Ukraine war.
Yeah.
Okay, so my sources in Ukraine brought to my attention that on September 2nd, Zelensky had Kolomoisky arrested for corruption. Kolomoisky was the Ukrainian oligarch that funded Zelensky's television show, Man of the People, and
yes,
funded Zelensky's presidential campaign. On September 4th,
hold on, Mitch,
Zelensky,
hold on, please.
Oh,
is that true? Did Zelensky actually have Kolomoisky arrested? That's asking
yes,
for trouble. That's amazing. Wow. All right. Go ahead. Thanks.
So on September 4th, Zelensky fired Reznikov as defense minister because of corruption and replaced him with Rustem Umerov, who Ukrainians know is far more personally corrupt man than Reznikov is. In fact, Reznikov was widely known to be corrupt, but was appointed as defense minister nonetheless. On September 6th, Anthony Blinken, U.S. Secretary of State, traveled to Ukraine with $1 billion in weapons to reward Zelensky for throwing his closest friends under the bus to make it look like he was doing something about the corruption. Remember that 77.6% of Ukrainians think Zelensky is the main corrupt person in the Ukrainian government. And that was a Ukrainian poll. My Ukrainian sources told me that Zelensky arrested Kolomoisky and fired Reznikov on orders from Blinken. At this point, they believe that Joe Biden is the real president of Ukraine. They say that the Ukrainian government does not in any way represent the will of the Ukrainian people.
Right.
It is the Biden administration that insists that Zelensky keep throwing troops into the Robertino kill box. Blinken has insisted that if Zelensky did not send these worthless goyim to their deaths, that he would not get that $1 billion of military equipment. So they had a big push that accomplished little, but costs June 4th, 66,000 Ukrainian soldiers their lives. Robertino is a village of 480 people that Ukraine says is of vital strategic importance. I can find no military analyst that thinks Robertino is of any strategic importance at all. When I look at terrain maps, even I can see no strategic importance in this small farming town. If Ukrainians
there.
Keep going, they will eventually arrive at Russia's first line of defense. This is September. They will arrive at the first line of defense. Okay, because the United States sent cluster bombs to Ukraine, Russia is using their newly developed cluster bombs to be used on the Ukrainians at Robertino. And as far as I know, they've already started using them there. So the next question is, why has Russia still not gone on the offensive?
Hold on,
so
Mitch. Hold on.
Sources,
hold, may I,
oh, go
hold,
ahead.
Mitch, Yeah, please hold that question. We'll restate that in just a minute. From a military perspective, I'm ignorant. I cannot see any justification for the human wave suicide attacks against the Russian machine, except to depopulate the ranks of those who might rise up against the Zionist Bolsheviks in Kiev. I cannot understand it. It makes no sense to me at all. Does it to you?
Well, it does in the context of them wanting to genocide the Ukrainian people.
That's what I think it's about. That's what I just said. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, listen, Kuleba and Zelensky and these guys are saying, well, we have to put Putin and Lavrov and all these people, Shoigu and stuff, on trial for war crimes after it was done. But the United States informed Ukraine that informed Zelensky that under no conditions would Putin, Lavrov, or Shoigu be up for war crimes. Okay, and this is for a very good reason, because it sets a precedence. Because what the United States has done for the past 50 years is far worse than anything Russia has done, and the American president doesn't want to go on trial for war crimes. So
no, do you not see a perfect parallel, well, close to perfect, between the Biden crime family syndicate, unelected, unconstitutional presidency, and the government of Ukraine? They're very similar in terms of the hideous corruption.
They're in bed together. I mean, Ukraine made Hunter Biden rich, which means they made Joe Biden rich. Okay,
you got it. Yeah.
So, and not only that, but we have to remember that they're all working together, even if it seems like a war. This is all orchestrated. And remember, the World Economic Forum goal is to kill people by wars. Russia knows this. America knows this. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So it's part of the plan.
Very good. Okay, so, go on to your second point that you were going to make.
Okay, so why has Russia still not gone on the offensive? My sources in Russia told me that there are two components to the war in Ukraine and the international sanctions war. Brazil, India, China, and South Africa all told Putin that BRICS would help him with the sanctions war if he would refrain from escalating the war or sweeping forth to take more territory.
Oh,
this
really?
Is because the other BRIC nations do not want the West interfering in their trade any more than the West is already doing. India is the BRIC spoiler. France said it would sell weapons to India if they would block Algeria from joining BRICS. Also, in order to get American military weapons and funds, India held up Turkey's accession to BRICS. Before this, China was going to solve the border issues with India. I reported this just a few weeks ago. But China does not like how India does things for the West. France tried to attend the BRICS summit in South Africa, but China and Russia nixed France from attending. So India said no to Algeria as a snub to China and to Turkey as a snub to Russia. So Russia made a lot of new economic deals with Turkey and China. Algeria refused to allow the French military to fly over Algeria to deal with Nigeria. China published a new national map that included much of Indian territory, more than any map before. Maps are a big deal with the Chinese. It describes all the territory they claim. China is thinking, why should they make peace with India if they go against China's interests by blocking Algeria? Russia is angry because they tempered their attacks against Ukraine at India's request, then India blocks Turkey from accession to BRICS. Putin puts a lot of emphasis on breaking the West financially, and BRICS is his battleground in the sanctions war. India is very important to Russia's plans. So that's what's kind of tempers things a bit. Consequently, Chairman Xi and President Putin did not attend the G20 meeting in India. You notice the news in the West never said why they didn't go. There was
Putin should not travel anywhere now. No.
Yeah, probably not.
No, not a good idea.
So the G20, however, refused to make a statement condemning Russia or in support of Ukraine. Why is this sanctions war so important to Russia? You see, the West was able to conquer the world because they were industrial nations. Industrial nations can prevail against agrarian or service-oriented nations in a war. Why has the West been losing wars against agrarian nations like Somalia, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya? Because the United States and Europe are no longer industrial nations, but service economies. A service economy does not have any capacity to amp up production to meet war demands. If you use this comparison, it becomes obvious that NATO and the EU are no longer industrial nations, but China and Russia are. Russia and China can defeat NATO and the EU. The biggest industrial nation in the EU was Germany, but sanctioning Russia cut off cheap fuel to Germany and killed German industry. Militarily, NATO and the EU are not a major threat to Russia. So the economy, is the West's weak spot, and you should concentrate your forces at the enemy's weak spots. Mm-hmm. Which we're talking about a financial economic weak spot here.
Right,
Ukraine
right.
seems not to know this. They attack strong points. They always attack strong points. So Russia does have time on its side. Keep in mind that the BRICS are working towards Antichrist's New World Order just like the West. We already know who wins the presidency of the Antichrist dictatorship, and it is not the West.
You know, Mitch, this is not going to sit well with the people of the Donbass if Russia does not sweep through that country and take it all. The Poland occupation of Western Ukraine seems to be very close to being executed, if that's the right word. They've got troops. They're being watched. They're going to move into Lviv and perhaps west. They want to take it. The Russians, what I'm told by people in Donbass, is that unless the Russians capture Odessa, Kharkov, and Kiev, Russia will essentially have lost. Now, this BRICS thing is a problem. There seems to me there comes to be a time when military geopolitics need to be separated from financial and economic politics, but that can't happen because they're inextricably linked. So I get that, but the Russians have got to go in and take control of that country and cleanse it of the malignancy that has destroyed it. Otherwise, it will always be a festering large tumor on the southern border of Russia and the Federation.
So let me explain what the sanction war is about.
Am I thinking right? You are thinking correct.
But see, this is a proxy war. So Russia can't send its bombers over to bomb London and Washington, D.C. and New York City and stuff like that. They can't do that because they're not at war with us, right? So the purpose of that bombing the enemy's homeland, is to destroy their economy, so that they can't support the war.
Well, that's right.
So because this is a proxy war, the sanctions war is that long-range bombing of the Western economies, okay? That is taking place of actual bombs going in. And at some point, Putin has already told everybody that he's going up to the Dnieper River and he's going to go to Odessa. That's going to happen, okay? But he can afford to sit there and let that go. Now, what's going to be the thing that's going to change everything is the United States is going to start shipping the long-range missiles that just a month ago we said that this would cause World War III if we ship those long-range missiles. Ukraine promises that they won't shoot Russia with those missiles, but they will.
Of course.
And when they hit Russian territory with those missiles, the Russian people are already alerted that they're allowing the Ukrainians to attack deep inside Russia. And they'll put up with that a little bit. They'll be a little bit patient. But if they start throwing lots of missiles into Russia, things will change, the equation will change, and then that would be when it forces Putin's hand that he has got to go ahead on the offensive. Okay, so these are the strategic calculations that are going on in his head. So.
All right.
So let me go over, I just want to go over how we got here, okay? The two main strategies that are used against humanity are cultural Marxism and the inevitability of gradualism. They work hand in hand. Cultural Marxism posits that to make political changes, it's best to make social changes first. In other words, if you change the culture, you can easily change the politics. Antonio Gramsci noticed in 1920 that people unthinkingly acquiesce to the culture they are born into. He predicted in 1920 that the Soviet Union would fail because they were imposing a political system onto a people who culturally were not ready for Marxism, and that's exactly what cultural Marxism means. Gramsci thought Marxism would only succeed where people's culture would accept it. This is why China and Vietnam are still Marxist nations, because their cultures were already in fact Marxist. There is no real political, social, or cultural opposition in these countries. This can be looked at as the strategy of the Antichrist, okay? So first get rid of the notion of God so that people have no objective morality. It is supplanted by a subjective morality that is an anti-morality. If they can erase God as absolute truth, then there is no basis of truth. If you can convince people that God does not exist, you can get people to accept or believe in anything. Let's look at the trajectory here. So if you can erase God, you can erase morality, erase science, and erase freedom.
Yeah.
This was the God is dead theology. It started in 1844 with the German philosopher Max Stirner. That year, he published his book, The Ego and Its Own. He wrote, "The work of the Enlightenment is the vanquishing of God. Man has killed God in order to become the sole God on high." Next came another German philosopher named Philipp Mainlander, who in 1874 wrote the book, The Philosophy of Redemption, in which he wrote, "God has died, and his death was the life of the world." Then came Friedrich Nietzsche, who popularized the concept in his book, The Gay Science. He wrote, in conclusion, "God is dead means that the belief in the Christian God has become unworthy of belief. Must we ourselves not become gods simply to appear worthy of that fact?" So in Genesis 3:22, it says, "Man has become as gods." These God is dead philosophers actually say the same thing, that man is God. Look around you. Everybody seems to be their own God, making their own morality to justify doing what they want. This is just the inevitability of gradualism that took only 189 years from when the first thought leader introduced the idea. In the United States, it was the philosopher Professor Thomas J.J. Altizer who made the God is Dead concept popular. He was a favorite of both the beatniks in the 50s and the hippies of the 60s, counterculture movements. Time magazine published his theology twice, in October 1965, and then again in Time's famous April 1966 cover published on Easter Day titled God is Dead. Altizer formalized his God is Dead theology in the 1967 book, The New Apocalypse, The Radical Christian Vision of William Blake. He was inspired by the British poet William Blake, who has visions of the death of God. So in 1983, Rabbi Richard L. Rubenstein popularized the God is Dead concept to Jewish audiences in his book, After Auschwitz, Radical Theology and Contemporary Judaism. He claimed that God actually died in creating the world, but for modern Jews, God died in Auschwitz. This woke the world at that moment in time to the idea that God did not exist. But I think he misinterprets. God did not abandon the Jews. The Jews abandoned God. This is what the Old Testament is a book about, the Jews abandoning God. They were so quick to blame God when they should have blamed themselves. The theological arrogance of this really sticks out. Some of his books were called, like, The Cunning of History, Mass Death in the American Future, published in 1973. In this book, he linked the Jews as a victim of slavery and said the Holocaust was just a continuation of slavery that has been engrafted for centuries onto the very body of Western civilization. He is showing his critical race theory here. His next book, published in 1983, evoked what would become the standard of the World Economic Forum. It was titled Age of Triage, Fear and Hope in Our Overcrowded World. Obviously, triage is to accommodate the global elite and exterminate the rest of us. The contemporary philosopher of the God of Dead is Dead movement is Slovenian professor of philosophy Slavo Žižek. He is the father of Christian atheism. Sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Christian atheism. Foreign Policy magazine even named him as one of the 100 most important contemporary thinkers in the world. So that's telling you that our foreign policy people, they read Žižek, okay? Žižek claimed that Christ became an atheist on the cross. To be a Christian is to be an atheist. That's how he explains Christian atheism. He has called things correctly. In 2016, he was against Hillary Clinton because she pretends to be a socially progressive but really stands for inertia. He supported Trump because he thought that Trump would galvanize the progressive Marxists to take action and accelerate Marxism in the United States by provoking a left reaction. Look what has happened in the past 3 years. He called it correctly. The global elite follow him, and you can see that Žižek is an astute analyst of events. This past week, Mikey Weinstein of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation went on the rampage demanding that a small Christian bookstore in a mini mall at Fort Bragg, now called Fort Faggot Liberty, be closed. He searches for any religious activity on a military base and tries to close it down. He obviously hates Christians. Yeah. So, after God died, objective science died. When I was young, I loved science. I read it prolifically. I trusted science because it was rigorously objective. Its objectivity came from the scientific method. It went like this. You form a hypothesis from your observations. After further observation and research of all the literature about others' observations, you form a theory. You plan experiments to test the theory. If all experiments carried out lead to the same exact results, then it can be a scientific law. But I witnessed this breakdown for financial reasons. Colleges and universities had to attract students to their discipline to justify their teaching positions. If you are going to qualify, if you are going for quantity instead of quality, you have to drop standards. In 1993, Bill Clinton signed the Student Loan Reform Act and allowed students to borrow directly from the government. This opened the floodgates to students taking loans to pay for college. Just as standards and rigorousness dropped as the student population swelled, so did the scientific method because all of these students had to write theses and the professors had to publish. By 2000, there were no longer any scientific laws. The highest level you could go was the theory. This was because some theories, like the theory of evolution, did not lend themselves to experimentation, yet were vital narratives to support cultural, social, and political narratives. In other words, to become a theory, most data from research or experimentation had to support it. By saying most, it did not have the rigorousness of a law. In other words, you could cherry-pick the data that supported your theory. This is significant because theory is accepted as truth, but not actually backed up by the facts. By 2020, the scientific theory was dead. Instead, formulating a theory, you analyze data and draw a conclusion and then communicate results. In other words, there's no theories and no laws. Okay. So there is no reason to believe science. We saw this during a COVID pandemic. Scientists were lying about everything. Even back in 1980, when I was in graduate school studying geography, the scientific method was still in force and rigorous. Climate change had become a political issue after Nixon passed the Environmental Protection Agency and the Endangered Species Act, creating a boom in environmental activism. Create a government agency, and they will pay money for research that backs up their reason for being. There were few students, but no professors, who believed in climate change emergency. The rest of us suffered them as conspiracy theorists. But today, because of the total political subjectiveness of science and the weakening of the scientific method, the climate change crisis is accepted by the public as absolute truth. I love physical geography, and I understand it thoroughly. There is right. no climate change crisis, period. Yet it is what is causing the impoverishment of humanity. That is why you pay twice as much for fuel now than you did on the day that the disgusting and reprehensible pedophile Biden became president and declared economic war on the American people and the world under the rubric of the Green New Deal.
How about economic yes. and moral war against the United States? This guy is depraved, awful.
I mean, if you stop and think about it, I mean, the death of the scientific method, and can I just say the death of science itself, because sure. even I can't read it anymore. Right. Because you know, last summer, the Scientific American said God is a racist. I mean, these people are wacko.
The controllers have taken it all over, Mitch. They've taken it all.
Yeah, yeah.
They run everything now
yes.
to serve their own evil,
yes.
disgusting agenda. Yes, you're right.
So after science died, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights died. In 1997, Jewish Marxist journalist Daniel Lazare published his book, Frozen Republic, How the Constitution is Paralyzing Democracy. He makes the case fundamentally that the Constitution is directly getting in the way of the progressive agenda. You can see this in our thing. In our country, as of January 20th, 2021, the Constitution became rather irrelevant when the disgustingly shameful pedophile Biden assumed power. Locally, on September 8th, 2023, the governor of my state, Michelle Lujan Grisham, issued a public health order to ban anybody from carrying a gun in Bernalillo County and the city of Albuquerque for 30 days. Even Elon Musk tweeted about how unconstitutional it was. You see, a couple of years ago, she closed down churches, gun stores, and liquor stores under public health orders. Uh-huh. After an 11-year-old boy was shot last week, she decided that gun violence was a public health crisis.
Right.
Now, criminals
mm-hmm.
are not a public health crisis. Only the guns they use are.
No.
Okay.
It's the guns.
So, you know, I worry about this a lot. I really have to keep my guns very locked up and secure. I worry so much that they're going to come out of my closet at night and blow me away, you know? gun violence in the home, right?
I know. Guns have a mind of their own.
If you are in this one county in New Mexico, you may not open carry any firearm, and you may not carry a concealed weapon, even if you have a permit. If you carry a firearm in a car, even to go to or from a gun store or a range, you must carry it in a locked box in the trunk. Violators will be fined $5,000 and convicted of the misdemeanor crime of disobeying a public health order.
Wow.
I am told by my local politicians that she built up a war chest to defend her order in court. This is the test case. Let's see how it goes. By test case, I mean what they're doing is they're having her try this total, you know, public health order because, see, for a long time, the CDC has been butting their nose into gun violence, okay? And they want to make it a health issue, a public health issue, because, if we get Obamacare paying for all your health care, and then the government orders a public health emergency, then people have to obey because the government pays for their health care. Right. So this is how this is testing the waters to see if they can just what they're aiming for is a total gun ban, which they're going to do before too long. So the sheriff of Bernalillo County, really a woke Democrat, said that his deputies will not enforce this order because it is unconstitutional. His deputies tell me he will not enforce it because he does not have enough money to defend against law officers. The mayor of Albuquerque, another woke Democrat, also said that his employees would not enforce the ban. The chief of police of Albuquerque went public to say his police officers will not enforce this public health order either. They are all on record as being anti-gun, but this is a test case for America. Let me explain. There's a federal law, that states that you cannot deprive people of their constitutional rights under the color of law. So like,
right,
if
right,
you or
right
I
there.
Go deprive yeah. somebody of their rights, it's not a crime, okay? But if you're a government official and you do it, it is a crime. So Michelle Lujan Grisham is sticking her neck out and betting that she does not get arrested for violating people's right under color of law. Because she did it once back during the epidemic.
Yeah. She never should have been allowed to get away with that. She should have been held accountable for the first one. Now look what she's done. Look what she's done. If she's not held accountable now, what message does that send to the other red state governors, or blue state governors, the communist governors?
Yep.
It tells them all, go for it. Not good. Wow.
Yeah, they're starting the process to abolish the Second Amendment. I think the courts, full of woke Democrat judges, will probably give her a victory because they want to set precedence. Because precedence is everything.
That's
in
what
this
they
country.
Do. That's how they do it. Yep.
The governor is sending the state police to enforce her order. I wonder if I will get busted.
Well, the sheriff there said the sheriff told her to go to hell. He wasn't going to enforce it. You saw that.
Yeah, I saw that, but the thing is I think this was pre-planned. She didn't intend for the local cops to do it because, see, the policemen that arrest you for that can go to jail, can go to prison for violating your constitutional rights, and you're likely to win that case against a police officer. You will not win that case against the governor, though. There's a chance you won't win that case.
Gotcha.
So the governor did is she's using the state police, which is under state command, and she's sending a bunch of them to Albuquerque to enforce this public health order. That's what they'll be in town for, okay? So the only thing that happened here is over the weekend downtown, people took their guns down and held a big demonstration against the public health order. So but these are new times, people, because what do you think about January 6th and what they did there? What if they just photograph all these people and they go hunt them down individually and throw them in jail for years waiting their trial for this misdemeanor offense and stuff? It's just a test case, but you can see through time. And you know what? If you go to law school right now, listen. I applied for law school back in 1986.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and I got admitted to law school, and I thought, well, you know, I was doing it so I could make a better living. But when I went to talk to the professors at the law school, you know, one of them told me, he says, you know what the truth is? And I says, well, the truth is the truth. And he says, no, the truth is what you can convince people the truth is. This is the mindset of our law system, our law professors.
Well, and how is this fake truth being instilled and inculcated into the mind and the subconscious mind of the masses, the mainstream media? Screen addiction.
Sure.
Repeat it over and over again. It becomes a reflexive reality for people. They cannot step aside and won't.
Wow. They're just going to beat the thing of, oh, nobody needs an assault weapon. Nobody needs an assault weapon. Well, you know what? The Supreme Court has already had cases where people argued that the Second Amendment wasn't talking about they're trying to argue that it was just talking about hunting guns and stuff. But the Supreme Court said, no, the Second Amendment is for the people to be the militia, and they need to have contemporary military firearms. This is what the Supreme Court has ruled on, okay? So you'll notice that when they talk, the news media talks to the public, they never go back and say, oh, well, the Supreme Court has said this, and so this is the way it is. They just keep repeating the mantra of nobody needs an assault weapon. Nobody needs an assault weapon. Okay? It's a brainwashing process, okay? Go back to that unthinkingly acquiesce to the culture that you're in. That's what everybody's doing, okay? It works. They know it works, okay? So that is what they're doing. Even back then, when I looked at the curriculum at the law school, when it came to the Bill of Rights, they never would teach about the Second Amendment. They just omit that entirely. Okay. So actually, if you go to any law school in America now, they're teaching the new lawyers, they're teaching them that the Constitution is a problem, not a solution. Okay, they want to, just like they got rid of reverence for God, they got rid of reverence for scientific method. Now they're working on getting rid of reverence for the Constitution. Okay. And the Constitution, what does it do for us? Well, the Bill of Rights gives us at least some individual freedom and stuff.
It's always the greatest document that it's the greatest document that humankind has ever created for the governance of people. It's got flaws. Everything does. But it is by far and away the most magnificent document ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next to Scripture, it's the most important.
Yeah, what he did is, John Stuart Mill, he said, well, you know, the problem with the democracy is it is a dictatorship of the majority, and it leaves the minority out and causes problems for them. So he said he suggested, and the American founding fathers thought, okay, well, we need to have a limited democracy. And what they mean by limited democracy is, yes, the majority can rule. However, we're going to have this Bill of Rights. These things, the government, no matter who's in charge, these things they cannot attack you on. In other words, freedom of speech, freedom of to have guns, the right to not incriminate yourself. You're seeing now that right to not incriminate yourself is drifting away very quickly, because now the FBI will tell you that you have to answer their questions, and if you go get subpoenaed to Congress, you have to answer their questions. You don't
That's
have right. a Fifth Amendment right anymore. It's gone. Okay, if it's
Can't
a serious case. Well, and
right.
little things that affect everyday people, they'll right. let you have your rights and stuff. But unless you get labeled a white supremacist, because that is the biggest threat to America. Believe it or not. Okay, that's what they say it is. They're convinced of it. So, fortunately, not many people. I mean, that guy in Jacksonville got arrested. Well, he didn't get arrested. He killed himself. But that was played over and loop and loop over the time, over and over again over time to tell people, oh, here's a white man just going out and killing random blacks. As if black people don't go kill random white people. They do it every day. You see it in the newspaper all the time. Okay. So what we do have a two-tiered justice system. Everybody knows it. Okay. So even that guy who got there's that guy who protested at the school board meeting and they arrested him for disorderly conduct. And then
Why did he protest? Because his daughter.
Well, his daughter was raped.
Savagely raped
in
the bathroom by some tranny.
Right.
This is,
and all they did to the tranny is move him to a different school. As a tranny, changed nothing. That's all.
According to many people who understand being a loving parent, a kind parent, a committed parent, that man could have gone postal, and people would have said, I understand why. I understand. It's a violation I can't even imagine of a father and a daughter. It's horrible, horrible.
And you do remember the story that same tranny was sent to a different school and he raped another girl over there too. Okay.
No, God. Yeah.
Yeah. So this father, he was saying, he said, well, he said, the governor offered me a pardon and stuff, Glenn Youngkin. He says, well, he'll just give him a pardon for that. But he said, well, initially I was thinking, well, I'll just fight it. But as I went through and I saw how the justice system was working, I realized that there's no possible way to get a fair trial. The political outcome will be the outcome of the trial.
That's right.
So he went ahead and accepted the pardon from the governor.
I pray the daughter is she'll never get over that. I just this war on children and childhood is something I just really have a big problem with. Oh my. If I were king, I would clean and cleanse that psychosis real quick from this planet. It would not exist. Man, that is bad.
Well, you know, there's a logic to what they're doing. They're attacking your children because they're your most precious thing. And what they're showing themselves is people will not protect their children. They will let their children have sex with the government, basically, what I call it.
It's true.
And the reason why is they're preparing us to take all our guns away. Because if you won't protect your children, you're not going to protect your guns, you're not going to protect your constitution, you're not going to protect anything. You're going to do exactly as you're told. And they know this, okay?
For the last 48 months, Mitch, 49 months,
yes.
Americans have purchased at minimum 1 million firearms per month for 49 straight months. Some months over 2 million per month, over 49 months. So to take those guns away, and God knows how many before, billions, I don't know how they're going to do it. If the people actually give up their guns, they might as well snap on the leg irons. That's the end. That's it.
Yeah, that is it. And you know what? They're just going to come up with a campaign like Guns for Ukraine. They're going to take all our guns and ship them to Ukraine. You know? I mean, they're very cynical, very manipulative and stuff, okay?
Right. I know.
So let me just say a thing about the war in Africa, because I'll just make a statement now that I think that World War III is going to go hot in Africa, okay? That's where it'll go hot at. So last week, France paid Islamic terrorists to go on the rampage in northern Burkina Faso. I think they killed like 53 people or something. On Saturday, French intelligence attempted a coup against the Burkinabe president, Ibrahim Traoré, to place some soldiers loyal to France in power. These nations will not have peace until all of the French leave. Okay? So, he's attacking Burkina Faso because they're on Niger's side, and he wants to cut off anything going, any support for Niger.
I think Burkina Faso has already sent a contingent of military into Niger.
Yes, they have. They've sent vehicles and aircraft there to Niger already. But what's absurd about it is, if you read the tea leaves over there and you see what popular opinion is, this guy, Ibrahim Traoré, who's the president of Burkina Faso. He's an army captain. He took over. The people love him. His people love him. He is immensely popular, and not just in Burkina Faso. Man, throughout West Africa, they love him. They look at him like he's the leader that they want to have.
And this
now,
is
we're
the
not
president,
talking about an old-fashioned dictator.
We're talking about
a guy who is for the people.
This is the president or whatever he is. Of,
the president of Burkina Faso. Yeah,
I forget the title. I'm trying to remember it, but yeah. So he's that big there.
Interim
you know, this
president.
Program
yeah.
has a very big following in Burkina Faso. And hello to all of our wonderful listeners there right now. They have a lot of people there, and they listen to this program. Well done.
So this is what's going to happen is. So the United States and France are piling military equipment and supplies into Nigeria right now. Okay, they're building up their logistics for the war. Okay, but here's the thing: is when they attack Nigeria, it's going to set Africa on fire. Okay. It'll set Africa on fire because, listen, the people of Nigeria and the parliament voted, should we attack Nigeria? The parliament said no. The people of Ghana, who's going to send soldiers, the parliament of Ghana had a debate, and they said no, we will not invade Nigeria. ECOWAS, at their meeting, the consensus was no, let's not invade Nigeria. And the African Union came out against invading Nigeria. And you got 78% of the people in Nigeria that support this government because it's their real, true government, okay? I saw figures just the other day. France pays 80 cents per kilogram of yellow cake from Niger. 80 cents. Do you know how much it goes for on the open market? $300 a kilogram. Yeah, and they're paying 80 cents profit. For it. Okay, and so just the other day, Niger says, well, if you want to buy our yellow cake, it'll be $200 per kilogram. Okay, so they want that money for their people, for infrastructure. I mean, it's like the second poorest country on earth, and France is just, you know, France is going to invade because they want that uranium, so that 100% of the French people can have electricity, but you know, only 10% of the people in Nigeria have electricity. So I mean, the selfishness of this is just appalling.
The French, I've never been a fan of the governments of France, not at all. Ever since the fake resistance of World War II and all that crap,
I don't think much of it either, too. So you see, I think what will happen. So let's try to draw a little picture here. What will happen is when Africa goes to their World War III of Africa is what they're calling it, and they also call it the War of Final Independence. It's an independence movement, a freedom movement against France and the United States. Uh-huh. Okay, so when this war goes, you know who's going to pump guns and money into the opposition will be Russia and China, and while NATO and the United States will be pumping it into the ECOWAS, forces and stuff. So and the president of Nigeria, he's very unpopular in Nigeria. People don't like him. They think he's corrupt. They think he's a jerk. Okay, they have no. There's no love lost for him. Okay, and then when I look at the media and like social media in West Africa, like Cameroon or Mauritania or Niger or wherever, Ghana even, he's called Tinubu is called the Uncle Tom of Africa because he represents the white man. Okay. Mm-hmm. And when they say white man, they mean the Western colonialists, okay, and stuff. So, this will erupt, and then I think what will happen is, it's just like, they're sending long-range missiles to Ukraine at the same time that they're going to provoke this war in Africa. Things could spiral out of control pretty fast, okay? I mean, it could happen pretty quick because if the war breaks out, if Russia has to go to war with NATO, it will be a nuclear war, period. Russia knows they can beat us conventionally, but why throw all those lives away when he can just nuke us, okay, and solve the problem? So one of the things that I have just sort of kind of had a feeling about this for a long time and stuff is that in these end time events and stuff, in scripture and prophecy, it doesn't really talk much about the United States. The only thing it talks about the United States is when it talks about the whore of Babylon, the capital of the world, which is the UN in New York City, gets evaporated. Okay, so I think when the Antichrist comes to power, I don't think America may not exist anymore when that happens. Okay, this is a speculation on my part. I don't know. There's other things I think I can say with more certainty. Joe Biden will be reelected as president of the United States in 2024.
Not if he's dead. Not if he's dead.
Well, I think what they have in mind is, if he gets reelected and Kamala is still the president, Kamala Harris will be the first female black president of the United States.
She's not black. She's Indian.
Well, she thinks she's black. And, after all, it's what you think you are that matters, not what you actually are, but what you think
she's
you are.
She's identifying as
you
black.
You get to choose your own identity.
That's right. That's right.
Well, her father is black. Her mother was Indian.
Yeah, I get it. But the mother was Indian. It doesn't matter. She's a fake. She's a lap napkin, and everybody knows it. here's the real reason they want her in the Oval Office. Doug Emhoff. Okay, that's the real reason.
Yeah.
Doug Imhoff, yep. her Jewish husband. This is a Mossad mm-hmm. thing, and they'd have hands-on direct control over the presidency. That's what they'd let. That's the only way that might happen. I still think, we'll see. I don't first of all care, because it doesn't matter who's in there anymore, Mitch. You know that.
No, it doesn't.
They'll do what they're told.
Yeah, it's not
Trump
a free
proved that.
We have
Trump,
no
Trump
control
proved that.
Of our country.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Right. I think that's why everybody should go out and vote for Trump on Election Day. Everybody should. Okay? No matter what happens, should just vote for him, because, we can't have the Democratic Party, Democratic National Committee, selecting candidates for the Republican Party. That we cannot stand for.
No. All right. Very good. All right. You have a good week, and keep me posted of anything I need to know about this governor thing. I'm watching it. This is really pretty
disgusting. I sure will. We'll hear about it. She may not want to push it too far, because the more people she arrests, the more chances she can be taken to court. She may not arrest anybody and just have the order and see if nobody gets arrested, then nobody has standing before the court to bring a charge against her.
Good point. What a scene. All right, we'll find out soon enough. Thank you, Mitchell. Very good. Very good report, as always.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. Good night. Mitch Henderson, that's it for tonight. On Monday, we're off and running again. Talk to you tomorrow night. Take care.